she inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us and for being a part of our world. And a thanks to the sponsor of this show, the Chapman Automotive Group. They are truly committed to doing their share and showing they care about their employees, their community, and the planet. We appreciate all they do to make a difference and appreciate their support of Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. We thank you, Chapman. So everybody, I hope you're ready to join me for yet another fascinating and informative show, Carbon Calculation 101. So get ready for Carbon Calculation. Our guest for this next hour is Shyla Raghav. She is the Policy Director and Head of Climate Change at one of the most well-respected and internationally recognized organizations working on critical conservation efforts in the world today. And I don't say that lightly. All of you that have been listening to me and have been a part of my world for many, many years know when I'm into the extreme, it's because I'm extremely impressed. So Conservation International is an organization that uses science, policy, and partnerships to protect the nature that people rely on for food, water, and our livelihoods. Imagine that, fresh water. So it's like, this is very, very important because we actually do need the planet to survive. And I certainly don't mean to be condescending, but we just have to drill that into all of our heads. What's going on is critical in nature, and every one of us needs to be a part of the solution. So Shyla is one of the youngest females, and I love saying that, and one of the few minority women to lead global climate discussions at the United Nations and during the Paris Agreement. The Carbon Calculator is literally the brainchild of our guest today, and it has the potential to impact all of our lives profoundly. Shyla, thank you so much, not just for joining us today, but for this amazing creation and the development and how it's rolled out. I cannot wait to hear more of your story.
Thank you, Gina. I'm so delighted to be with you today.
Well, let's say 10 years after hosting Mrs. Green's World and interviewing some of the brightest and most impactful people on the planet, to me, what got me so passionate and excited about this is this, your brainchild. It's an important solution for our planet, not just discussing the problems and the challenges and how bad is it, but all of our inhabitants on this planet are being impacted. So I'd love you to, for this first part, share with us a little bit about your journey and what led you to your commitment to develop the Carbon Calculator for consumers. What started you on this journey, and did you know this is where it was going to be?
So I've been at Conservation International for about 5 years, and I started in the policy realm. And so, as you alluded to, I was working pretty actively on international relations and most exclusively on trying to craft and develop the global agreement that resulted in the Paris Accord from 2015. I think one of the issues that we were really focused on at that point was trying to better understand the contribution and the role of the land and forestry sectors in meeting our emissions reduction targets, but also adapting to the impacts of climate change. But you know, for a long time, I almost felt like the issues of reducing deforestation were marginalized from broader action on climate change. I think, you know, in almost every discussion or dialogue on climate issues, it usually focuses on energy and on fossil fuels, which is really important. But what we realized in Paris, and when we started to look at the numbers and the data that was coming out around that time, is that at least 30% of what's needed to solve climate change, almost a third of what we need to do, comes from nature. And this is a remarkable fact for even those of us in the conservation community. We always knew that stopping deforestation and scaling up restoration of natural ecosystems is important because trees hold carbon in their trunks, in their leaves, in their biomass, but also in the soil. And at the same time, when we clear them and burn them, this releases a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. In fact, 30% of what's needed to stop climate change can come from stopping the loss of these ecosystems and aggressively restoring them. And so that kind of set us down the path of looking at the ways in which we could incentivize and make this a personalized issue and bring it home for people to really recognize not only how their day-to-day actions are having an impact on the climate, but more importantly, what they can do to play their part in contributing to maximizing one of the most important solutions to climate change, which is nature.
So the perfect segue to that is it sounds rather pithy sometimes when you say people need nature to survive. And, you know, the response can be, well, really? Yeah, we knew that. But there's something deeper to this why, to me. When I walk around and I think people are living their lives, many of them unconsciously, not intentionally unconscious, but they're not facing this reality that from where I sit is creeping closer and closer and closer, as evidenced by Harvey and Maria and, you know, the storms that we just saw. It hit our country very, very up close and personally. What's your why behind your desire to come up with a solution for consumers? I think people do care. If it knocks them on the head, nobody says, I don't care about the planet. I mean, what can I do about climate change? Millions of people are paying attention. What's your why? How can you set the hook for all of our listeners about why it's so critically important now more than ever to get engaged?
I think there's a fundamental shift that took place around the time of the Paris Agreement, and even with the election of Donald Trump. I think that prior to both of these pivotal moments, we recognized or understood climate change as an issue that was the responsibility of our governments to solve. And particularly around the Paris Agreement, and especially when we heard news of the Trump administration signaling its intent to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, I think it really served as a wake-up call where there's really a broader sense of understanding and awareness that the democratization of climate change is really a trend that we're seeing now, that it's not just one person's issue or a government's issue. This really is something that is incumbent on each and every one of us to solve, that we all have a role to play, and that our actions are not only best for our own self-interest, but for the fate of the entire planet and for our future. So it does come back to our own well-being and our own ability to survive, to reduce the risks and the impact. It's really the best insurance policy that we have to sustain humanity and to sustain our source of food and fresh water and the ecosystems that we depend on.
And, you know, there are obvious things that were maybe accelerated or exacerbated, or some type of extreme focus was put on what can happen because it happened on our shores. But places like Miami, they have extreme changes every day. I mean, I've watched numerous specials about octopus floating down the street. Their flooding is just constant. So it's not just the big catastrophic storms. It's creeping up in other ways right here in the United States. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. So there's kind of what we talk about is two different types of events. There's slow onset, so the ones that do creep up, so whether it's ocean acidification or sea level rise, those happen slowly, and their effects are cumulative over time. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's extreme events and disasters and shocks that take place, like droughts or forest fires, or the hurricanes like the ones we saw. And all of those in some way are being amplified and exacerbated by climate change. And I think in the past, again, what we would see is that the impacts of climate change are far removed from us. They're in a place like the Maldives or in the Pacific Islands that are low-lying and exposed more acutely to these risks. But in recent years, and particularly this year, with the onslaught of hurricanes, I think that Americans are recognizing that climate change is an issue that's affecting everyone, no matter what your socioeconomic standing, no matter what your profession. Everyone is affected by climate change. It's part of everyone's personal story. And I think that it also then evokes a sense of responsibility, because our actions today will have an influence on the next 100 years of accumulation of gases and warming. And so we really have a narrow window of opportunity to get a handle on climate change. And the research has shown that emissions need to peak in 2020. So we have a very definitive period of time between now and then in which we really need to start shifting gears and putting in place, laying the groundwork for a decarbonization and a new way of structuring our society and our economy if we are going to have any chance of curbing the most harmful impacts of climate change.
And I think there, you know, the extreme storms, the mega fires, they get our attention, to me, not enough. I mean, they're big news and then they're off the news, depending upon what is the, you know, something coming out of the White House today. And I don't want to get into that because this is a positive show. But are there not more subtle and more less known climate change occurrences that people need to care about? Because even though it might not be impacting my life now, the ripple effect will touch my life. You know, what I call the hidden faces of climate change. Do you have some thoughts on some of those lesser known, you know, impacts of climate change?
Sure. There's one that Conservation International works quite actively on is coffee. So coffee is a commodity that is important. We all have our morning cup of coffee and kind of take it for granted. But recent research has found that coffee growing areas are moving to higher elevation gradients. And what this implies is that the amount of area that is suitable for growing coffee will be halved. So half of the area that is currently under production for to produce coffee will no longer be viable by 2050, for example. So this would imply that we would have higher prices for our coffee, or that many of the hundreds of millions of people that depend on coffee for their livelihoods will lose that source of income. And so this is kind of an example of an impact that might directly affect not only companies that rely on that commodity, but those of us who consume it on a day-to-day basis. So climate change is really something that's pervasive across all sectors of the economy. It's not just something that will affect our cities and our infrastructure, but is also fundamentally going to affect the supply chains for many of the companies that depend on raw materials or supplies that come from the developing world and from other places, which then are felt and experienced on a very visceral and personal level by consumers.
And Shaila, one of the boards that I sit on is the international board called SADO, and it's the Intercultural Center for the Study of Deserts and Oceans. And we just had a board meeting a couple of weeks ago, and mostly the area of focus is around the Sonoran Desert and the Sea of Cortez. And what has come so laser sharp focused for me is what I call the ripple effect. It's not just the loss of the vaquita, for example. It's the loss of fish, entire species that villages and communities and families rely on for their livelihood from forever. I always like to say, well, from forever. It's all their families known. So there are more impacts like that where I might not eat tuna, but I know, you know, hundreds of people who do. And if their tuna disappears because of this, maybe it'll come front and center. Does that make sense? I mean, there are those little, the ripple maybe not have hit us yet, but mm-hmm. Beware, it's coming. And you say coffee, and I'm sure people on our show listening will go, oh, don't take away my coffee or make it, you know, $10 a cup.
Exactly. And it's interesting that you bring up tuna. There's also a lot of research about how tuna is affecting the Pacific Island nations whose economies are almost entirely dependent on tuna. And what's happening with tuna is that they're moving, their migratory patterns are shifting such that they're moving in deeper and higher seas. And many of the fishermen in the Pacific Islands don't have the equipment or the means for going out into those deeper seas, nor do they have the fishing rights in those regions. And so this also might disempower a lot of fishermen and a lot of island nations who rely on tuna for their GDPs and for the incomes of their fishermen. And so this might is another example of how climate change is going to affect the fundamental sources of income for many nations who are already being battered by the impacts of climate change. And on a personal level, we'll also come back. We're in a very connected global economy. So this will inevitably also affect the availability of resources and the prices that we pay at the checkout counter for many of the goods that we take for granted today.
And create more climate refugees. I mean, I'll never forget a presentation I went to several years ago that was done by someone from Homeland Security, and climate change is one of their major areas of focus because it creates climate refugees. People are starving and they move, and it's, you know, there is a ripple effect that we might not feel directly here in the United States, but we do. So it's
exactly, and there's also been some really interesting research that has linked a lot of the refugee crisis in Europe to climate change and back to droughts. And there's also a lot of migrants from places in Africa like Sudan and Eastern Africa, which have been hit by crippling droughts, which also fuels the turn to terrorism. So there's many ripple effects that also drive people into the informal economy or to poaching, for example,
right,
and wildlife trafficking. So there really is a lot of connection between these issues, and the better that we can anticipate or prevent some of these effects by managing and dealing with climate change, but also preventing it from getting worse, is really in our best interest.
And one of the things I do when I do public speaking is I throw questions out to hopefully get people's attention and say to them, how many people do you think will die from starvation in the world this year? And, you know, they guess 5 million, some people say 200,000, and it's 36 million and growing. And people sit with that. And they're like, you know, sometimes they say, you've got to be kidding me. And I'm like, no. And of course, many of them are children and the people you spoke about. Their farms are gone forever. They're not coming back in our lifetime from drought or the devastation of whatever latest catastrophic weather event we have. So what about, you know, it's shifting the habitats of plants and animal species on the planet as well. So climate change is doing that. Can you give us a couple of examples in your work that got your attention about how climate change is changing the patterns? I mean, we spoke about tuna, but what about plants and some other animals on the planet?
Yeah, and I think one of the concerns from a conservation perspective is that a lot of the protected areas may be fragmented or they haven't been designed in a way to allow for the movement of species to enable them to adapt to the variable precipitation or temperature patterns. So one of the things that we've also been looking at is how can we design protected areas and wildlife corridors so that they will make way for or allow species to move between different areas so that they can adapt to the impacts of climate change. There's other issues with in terms of migration. I'm originally from India, and I've been watching very closely what's happening there, and particularly with the transboundary water issues And with the melting of the glaciers in the Himalayan region, this is going to affect the amount of water that's available not only for India, Pakistan, but also for a country like Bangladesh, which gets flooded almost every year.
Every year. We have to take a very short break, 30 seconds, and we'll be back. Hold that thought. More from Shaila Raghav from Conservation International. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and SpeakUp networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And hopefully at this point, your head is spinning with really good things to think about, and we're going to talk a lot about what you can do to make a difference for the next segments of the show. But thank you for listening. Carbon Calculation 101. Our guest for this hour is Shaila Raghav. She is the Policy Director and Head of Climate Change at Conservation International. She's an expert on the impacts of climate change to people across the globe and on international climate policy. She has appeared on CNN and Vice News, and I always like to do a shout-out for Vice News on the air, because if you want to see some on-the-ground, unfiltered, what I call true, I mean, no alt facts, you're there witnessing it, check out Vice News. Go to your computer, find it on your television, tape it. It's one of the best sources of information for Mrs. Green's World team that I have found. And a little bit more about Shaila. After attending nearly a decade of United Nations climate talks, she joined Conservation International to help identify and deliver nature-based solutions to climate change. As we are learning this hour, the solutions are some of the most economical, sustainable, and effective methods for both sequestering carbon and helping people and the planet adapt to warmer temperatures. Shaila, thanks once again for being here, and we will get to lots of details about the climate, about the calculator, but I have a couple, like two or three more questions in terms of what you were talking about, the habits of plants and animals and corridors. I mean, we're facing the possibility of a wall here in the United States, and there's not a lot of conversation about the impact of migratory patterns for animals and birds, and, you know, the beat goes on. So just expand a little bit on that. You were talking about Bangladesh.
Absolutely. So in terms of Bangladesh, one of the things that is quite apparent is that especially when the mangroves and the coastal forests have been cut or removed, this exposes people on the coastlines, and particularly in a place like Bangladesh, which is essentially a delta, is the mouth of a delta. When that natural barrier or buffer is no longer there, this exposes people, and they're more vulnerable to coastal storms, storm surges, or sea level rise. So there's really many ways that we can work with ecosystems and with nature to help us adapt to the impacts of climate change. And even with exploring the post-Hurricane Sandy recovery efforts, one of the things that the team there implemented was oyster reefs to provide, again, a natural barrier against sea level rise and storm strength. And so there's a number of types of solutions that we've been advocating and promoting and testing on the ground to try to, through using natural ecosystems, increase the resilience of human populations and people. There's also, I alluded to the types of interventions that we can take with our management of protected areas and natural landscapes. to provide corridors and the ability for species to move in larger areas so that they can be more resilient and adapt to the impacts of climate change. If you can imagine, if they're fragmented and boxed up in a particular area, this then restricts their ability to be for food sources or to roam and range and find new sources of prey, for example. And so this is another type of solution that we're looking at, is to adapt our approach to conservation so that it takes into account the impacts of climate change.
And, you know, you talked about, I am obsessed also with biodiversity and the things that we can learn from nature that we haven't even begun to tip the iceberg, to scratch the surface, so to speak. So devastation and deforestation, we're destroying solutions that we don't even know exist. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is a loss for humanity, that we're just clear-cutting forests, and I'm going to say a little bit more about that later in the show. But back to the worldview, because you travel around the world, and in terms of the United States withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, how concerned are you about that in terms of its implications for what we are going to be able to do to combat climate change?
Yeah. So I'll, to be honest, you know, it was really a deep and devastating blow to the climate community when President Trump signaled his intent to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, simply because so many of us have invested years in designing an inclusive and resilient climate agreement that that every country could see itself in, and that really created a basis and a platform for global and collective action on climate change. It really was an inspiring and momentous occasion to be a part of, and really, I think, signaled a pivotal switch in the way in which we see our relationship to each other as countries, and in which we are all finding collective responsibility to address climate change. And so President Trump's decision really was quite disappointing from that perspective, and raised a lot of concerns about the United States, the lack of United States leadership and what that would mean for the UN process, for the United States business competitiveness, especially in comparison with European economies or even China, who have assumed a lot of leadership in development of renewable technologies. But I think I was quite pleasantly surprised to see, after President Trump's decision, that there was this growing movement called We're Still In,
yes,
which is essentially,
yes,
a platform where cities and states and companies could compensate for the lack of U.S. government action and to send a separate signal to the world that Donald Trump's views do not represent the power of the United States and our people. And so I think that was quite encouraging and quite inspiring. And in aggregate, you could argue that this might, in fact, galvanize people to have an impact even beyond what we could have done as part of the Paris Agreement. And so, you know, I think there's two sides to the coin, that we'll have to keep working aggressively on the Paris process and still investing in it and making sure that it creates the rules and the conditions for ambitious international action, but at the same time creating a space for other actors and for optimism. And that movement, we're Still In, gives me a lot of hope and optimism, and gives me a sense that there really is this democratization of action on climate change, and that we're all really taking ownership over our piece and the role that we play in contributing to meeting global goals.
You know, what a great answer. I mean, it's not business as usual, and nothing inspires people more to stand up for what they value than when they're attacked. When their values are called into question or not supported, people start listening a little bit more acutely, and I think your answer is so reflective of that. And I agree. There's so much more going on at the local, state, and regional levels in our country than I've seen in years. So there's always hope, and some days I have to remind myself of that, because it's pretty, other than that, it was really embarrassing. it's onward and upward, and I think the United States and other world leaders reacted accordingly. So just going back for a minute to your experiences with everyday people, you travel around the world, yes, you talk to scientists, but I'm sure you encounter busy people living their lives. Are they concerned? Are people in fishing villages? Are they trying to survive? Do they know their very livelihoods are threatened? What kind of impact are you sensing from the people who will be truly impacted the most from the droughts and the flooding and the shorelines disappearing?
No, I think it's quite interesting because the debate abroad is very different than the debate that we have in the United States. When you travel internationally and you interact with people in the UN meetings particularly, or even in rural communities in Africa, everyone's acutely aware of the impact and the reality of climate change. And the debate isn't about whether or not it's real or
right.
it's happening. It's
right.
about and which is refreshing because you have a very different starting point, and rather the debate is about what should we do about it. How do we create the incentives and the policies and the frameworks, the platforms, the coordination that's needed to scale up the solutions that we know need to happen? And how do we channel the investment to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars that need to be mobilized to scale up not only our action on preventing climate change, but also adapting to its impacts? So I think that particularly those who are working in climate-sensitive sectors, so fishermen, farmers, these are the people that we work with at Conservation International on the ground who are acutely aware of what's happening and will tell you stories of their childhood and how they're experiencing impacts of climate change that they never have before, or that the growing seasons have altered their ability to plant wheat or corn or to sustain the cultivation that's needed to feed their families. And so there really is, I think, a broad understanding around the world about the impacts of climate change, but really the debate is about what should we do about it.
It's so affirming to hear that, and that's my assessment from reading and, you know, researching and on. It's like we're asleep at the wheel, and not all of our citizens, but in terms, there's no debate. There's no talk of climate deniers in the international community. And the thing that surprised me a little bit about our withdrawing from the Paris Agreement is that most huge, big business leaders around the world, including in the United States, they're taking it very seriously because they're smart enough to know it's going to impact their bottom line. It's not going to be something that if we ignore, it's going to go away. It will cost millions and millions, billions of dollars to businesses because of its impact. So I thought
exactly.
Maybe the businessman in Donald Trump might have, you know, knocked on his shoulder a little bit, but we digress. So
you're so right, because if you're the CEO of Starbucks or if you're
yes.
the CEO of Coca-Cola, where are you going to get your water from? Where are you going to get your coffee from, right? That these are all issues that they're also acutely aware of because they have to project out 5-10 years on what's their business plan. And climate change is directly going to affect their bottom line over the next few years, and so we're really starting to see those gears shifting in the corporate world, and even investors as they're getting more demands from their shareholders to reduce risk in their investments, and investments that are affected by climate change are risky. So this is really something that's starting to get internalized across many sectors.
And the good news that I see, I do see good news, after what happened in Las Vegas, it's a couple of days, hard days of seeing all that's good going on. But the whole impact of green investing, it's one of the most exciting for me. I probably get something in my news alerts every day about the Keep It In The Ground movement helped, divest, invest, that strategy worked. So I think you're right. There's really big, big, bold solutions already taking place about just acknowledging what a threat it is to our civilization. So before we get into the big solution that I'm so excited about and the carbon calculator, it's kind of like I thought a lot about where do I put this question. When I did my research, the climate calculator is a first, and we'll go into why that is. But if we don't pay attention, is it your sense, and I'm asking you to predict the future here, Shyla, is it going to continue to accelerate? The three megastorms we had, the Pacific Northwest was burning almost all summer and impacted friends of mine's vacation. People were wearing masks. I mean, it was burning in a huge section of our country. Do you think if we don't really get extreme about the reversing or the just the slowing down, is it going to accelerate?
My fear, and I do believe that it will accelerate, mostly because carbon dioxide can persist in the atmosphere for about 100 years. So the warming that we're seeing today is the result of the cumulative emissions from the past 100 years. We can't change the past, so we've already locked in a certain degree of warming, and we'll continue to see that warming. The decision that we have today is the extent to which we will take actions to prevent these impacts from accelerating to a point beyond which there will be irreparable harm, and we will have lost irreplaceable ecosystems. So that's really the pivotal point that we're at. But we've really lost the luxury of a choice between do we solve climate change or do we adapt, just face the consequences and adapt to its impact. We're really at that point where we have to be investing in both.
Yeah, game on, people. Let's do it. So let's start to talk about the climate calculator, which I call hope, possibility, and change, because it's a tool to get us, every human being involved, to measure and to make a difference. So talk a little bit about the carbon calculator. I have, needless to say, I have a lot of questions about how it works, what it measures, but you start with just what was your big vision?
Absolutely. So as I alluded to earlier, we really wanted to give individuals to basically walk them through a series of questions so that they could understand the impacts of their daily action on their emissions, on their footprint, essentially, on greenhouse gas emissions. And at the same time, we saw the emergence of new research and information that allowed us to, with more precision, include on the back end calculations and parameters that would allow us to have a more precise figure in letting someone know what their yearly footprint and the emissions profile looked like. And so we included a number of different features. You can calculate your own emissions, your own footprint, or it can be for your entire household, but you can also offset an event or a trip based on the number of people that are coming, how many people might be flying in, the types of amenities that you'll have available at that event. And so we really wanted to create different options so that based on your lifestyle, you could select what worked best for you. And so based on where you live, your how you choose to transport yourself to get from point A to B, how much you fly, you can even your diet. Many people don't realize, but your diet has a direct relationship and connection to the emissions within your footprint, simply because there's many commodities that are driving deforestation and causing a large portion of emissions. And so we wanted to basically create a calculator where every person could see themselves in it, and while they go through the process of answering the questions, provide them with tips on how they can make lifestyle changes along the way to reduce their footprint, but then ultimately give everybody the option to offset their emissions for those emissions that they really don't have the option of reducing or eliminating from their footprint.
And I think that we have to, you know, I'm just famous or infamous for asking this big, bold question with a minute till the break. But when we come back, that to me is the perfect starting point for when we come back, because there are some carbon calculators out there where you can do it. But the difference from this one, if I am correct, is that connection that you just mentioned about how does the carbon calculator connect users to the carbon market. I think that's a huge, unique feature, and I'd like to talk more about that. We have many more questions of Shaila Raghav, who is the Policy Director and Head of Climate Change at Conservation International. Please stay here with me. Quick 30-second break, and back with some more great information that impacts all of our lives. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being a part of it. We're going to learn about how to calculate our carbon impact, our carbon footprint, and then what to do about it. Why does it matter? Joining me for this hour to answer so many important questions and other questions is Shaila Raghav. Shaila is one of the youngest females, and I love saying that, and one of the few minority women to lead global climate discussions at the United Nations and during the Paris Agreement. In her current position, she is overseeing the development and the rollout, and it's the first one on the market that actually allows users to calculate their carbon footprint and give them the opportunity to directly offset that footprint. So, Shaila, do tell. The next part of it is we have to talk about, you know, how it works, how our listeners can do the offset piece, and how does it directly impact saving critical forests? I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I'm about to head off to the rainforest for 15 days, and it's where my journey began. And literally, seeing this deforestation, I switched careers, and I started Mrs. Green's World. That's a pretty dramatic impact. So I was lighting up a lot during the research for this show.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear, and it's funny that you say that, because witnessing the destruction of tropical forests is also what motivated me to get into this line of work, and to me really it gives me the opportunity to contribute my life to a greater purpose, one of which saving tropical forests and our natural ecosystems is one of the most important. So that very much resonates with me.
And, I love that also, you said that. I want to like ring the bell or something, but it was profound, and I wept, and I didn't cry. There's a difference between weeping and crying when I saw what was happening. And it was not like they were farming the wood. They were slashing and burning these huge trees to make way for beef cattle and for palm oil. And, you know, you're in a canoe and you say, how can this happen? How could you cut down one of those trees, let alone clear cut and burn them? So I digress, and I want you to talk more about the climate calculator. I had a moment right there, but it's a big moment for me.
I agree. It's unconscionable. And, you know, traditionally in the conservation or environmental community, our motivation for saving those places was the cultural value, the ecosystem services, the tremendous biodiversity that they house. But the motivation within this carbon calculator is to tap into another really important ecosystem service, and that's carbon sequestration. And about 11% of global emissions come from the destruction of tropical forests, which is more than all cars, SUVs, and trucks combined. So it's really a significant source of emissions.
That's and a huge, significant like huge. Just say that again. Do people get it? It's huge.
It's huge. It's more than all cars, SUVs, and trucks combined. So, and this comes from the clearing of tropical forests to make way largely for agricultural production. That originates for the production of beef, soy, palm oil, pulp, and paper. And palm oil, folks don't realize, but palm oil is in a lot of day-to-day goods. So many of our soaps have palm oil.
It's almost in everything. Yes.
It's almost in everything. And the good news is that there are substitutes. We can use other types of oil, or we can choose to purchase sustainable palm oil, or purchase grass-fed beef, or sustainable soy. So there are alternatives. And so part of it is understanding the impact of the consumption of those commodities on tropical forests. And so looking at those big numbers, we really thought that if we are going to save our planet, if we're going to save the species that rely on and depend on these and the communities that depend on these forests, and if we have any chance of solving climate change, we need to reduce deforestation and we need to restore these ecosystems. And so the carbon calculator is really our way of connecting consumers in a place like the United States to these impacts that are taking place in many developing countries to produce the commodities that we consume and depend on. And so what we've done through this carbon calculator is a series of questions and modules that will allow you to calculate what your annual footprint contributing to carbon emissions is, but then directly gives you the opportunity to offset those emissions. And while we encourage everyone to make the lifestyle changes to reduce their footprint to the extent possible, so meatless Mondays, or reducing your consumption of red meat, or only purchasing sustainable or deforestation-free palm oil, or flying less, or taking public transit. These are all things that people can do to reduce their footprint. But to a certain extent, there might be some emissions that you can't avoid entirely. If you're living in a city that that sources its energy from a power supply that is coal-fired, and you don't have the option to purchase renewable energy, there's what we've offered through this calculator is the option to offset your emissions, to neutralize them by investing in projects that provide the incentives for communities in these areas that are at risk of being deforested and degraded to conserve and protect them. And so we featured three projects where we've actually been able to partner with local communities and with the private sector and with governments to incentivize the reduction of deforestation, right? We've demonstrated that reduction and generated verified carbon credits from those projects. And by offsetting your emissions, you're purchasing those credits that have already resulted from the reduction of deforestation. So it's in a way you're supporting local communities and you're supporting projects that have already demonstrated success and will continue to if we can invest in them in the future.
And sometimes when a guest like you is talking and connecting those dots for us, I want to add, pay attention, everybody, because I am. The life you save may be your own, or your spouse, or your children, or your grandchildren, because this is big stuff. And I told you about, saying tongue-in-cheek, we have a crush on Conservation International here at Mrs. Green's World, but there's reasons why we have such admiration and respect for the work that you're doing. Tell us about what Conservation International did when they announced the sale and how they purchased 2 million carbon credits. Is my research correct?
Yeah, so it's actually quite remarkable because our model is to is not to go into a forest and tell local communities that they they can't come out, right? We don't put armed guards and say, don't touch this forest. Our approach is very different. We recognize that people are dependent on these ecosystems and their services, and it's in their best interest to secure and steward them. And oftentimes they want to, but maybe coming up against economic difficulties or challenges to sustain their livelihoods and their families. So our model is really to use the financial incentives to partner with them, to provide them with training, for example, to put in place sustainable agriculture so that they can continue to generate income from the production of coffee or other commodities so that they can sustain their livelihoods. And as an incentive for reducing clearing of the forest, and that model we've seen is really a winner, because for it to be sustainable in the long term, it has to be internalized and accepted by the local communities. And so the three projects that we've featured are areas where CI has been working for decades. There's one in Peru, one in Kenya, and one in Madagascar. And we guarantee that any offset that's purchased from this calculator will support one of these projects, which all have their very unique features and very close collaboration with the local communities.
And drill down for us into the whole conversation about purchasing or selling carbon credits. How does that work for my new listeners and for people that might need a refresher? How does the actual money, you know, that you, if you purchase some carbon credits, how does it work?
So basically the carbon credit is generated when there's a reduction in deforestation rate. So basically what you have to demonstrate is that the action you've taken has actually led to a result that's reduced emissions. And when you do that, when you can show that there is a particular baseline, and through our investment, through our actions on the ground, we've been able to reduce that rate, you then are eligible to generate verified carbon credits that equate with the same amount of reductions that you've achieved. And then basically, you're then able to sell those credits on the market. And there's many different exchanges that have been established, and some are international, some are at the national level. Currently, what we're operating on is a voluntary carbon market. And there's a number of different brokers and exchanges that that facilitate that process, because there isn't an international price on carbon. We work through many different types of exchanges or brokers, and there will be a price on carbon, so it usually depends on the market rate. It can range anywhere from a few dollars a ton to about $10 a ton. And so what we do is we calculate through this tool the amount of tons of offsets that you would want to offset based on your footprint, and then we will give you a price based on the market rate for those credits to equate with whatever footprint you're trying to neutralize.
And I just want to reiterate for everyone, you know, I wrote a newsletter recently about it's time to be inconvenient. And I was going to say inconvenience, but we need to be our behavior. It's inconvenient maybe to think about, oh, how am I going to do this? It is so easy. That's what I want to reach out to our listeners and say, you know, you go to conservation.org. If you just Google Conservation International and put in carbon calculator, believe me, it lights up. But you go to their website, find that page, and it's so easy. All it takes is a little bit of your time and an investment in your future. Like, you know, you study more for a driver's license, but all you have to do is calculate your footprint with really easy to answer questions. Then you are directed how to offset your footprint, and then you're told about how to use, you're solving climate change by saving critical forests. They are the lungs of the earth. And I say that to people, do you understand that the air you're breathing, you should be thanking them because they're allowing you to breathe this air? Like, say, thank you, rainforest, because that's how important it is. How are you going to roll it out, as I say? It's relatively new. Kelly King, our show producer, saw it on Vice News, and we just like were out to get you so fast. It was not funny. It's like, we've got to get her on this show. How are you going to spread the word? We have, you know, maybe 100, 120,000 regular listeners. How are you going to get to the millions of people that do care and want to be led to solutions? What's Conservation International going to do to make this go viral?
You're right. That's our objective. That's what we're aiming for. Is that
yes.
This really needs to go viral, and for people to connect their livelihoods, their well-being, climate change to the forests, and to the planet is crucial. And we're really going to be launching a pretty big climate change campaign over the next few months, and we'd love to see everyone involved in it. And we're going to be providing actionable solutions for people to commit to promote through social media, to create original content, and to really internalize and personalize the climate change story for themselves. And so right now, the Carbon Calculator has been launched, and we're hoping for it to iterate over time so we can include additional questions or potentially even different countries, because right now this calculator is from a U.S. perspective. But we'd really like to reach our partners and our friends around the world so that it's available and a tool that everyone can use, and everyone can see the connection between their actions and the types of solutions that we have at the tips of our fingers. We don't need to create a new technology or a new source of energy. In this case, we have these trees. We just have to do all we can to keep them standing. I think it's quite a powerful message.
It's the biggest fight of our life. And what I loved so much about this is the actionable piece that you mentioned. People ask me all the time, what can I do? And I usually say, get involved in policy, because yes, don't use water bottles and don't use plastic bags and all of that good stuff. But if you really want to change the planet, we've got to change some policies at the local, state, and regional levels. Well, this is one thing that you can do when you're planning your family vacation. Include nature in your decision and how you can defend her or it. It's like I say, our lives depend on it. So I would like to do a shout out for conservation.org is the website. Facebook is Conservation International. It's so easy to find these things. And Twitter, it's conservation.org, and the same for Instagram. And Shiloh, what's your shout out to people? You get the last word. Fill out the carbon calculator, spread the word. What would you love the call to action to be from the thousands of people who listen to the show?
I think that would exactly be it, is fill out the carbon calculator, see how climate change affects you, but also how you are affecting our planet and climate. See what it is that you can do in your day-to-day life. Consider forests and nature as our ally in the fight against climate change, and make this an issue that you vote on. Make this one of the central issues that companies and our policymakers see that we care about. And I'm very optimistic and hopeful that that we can solve the climate crisis, that we can create a better planet and future for generations to come. And I'm looking forward to joining you all on that fight.
And it's just, I mean, it's amazing that with all you're doing, you took the time to have this conversation with us, but it's really important part of your work, I hope. And getting the word out is going to be everything. So don't just fill out the carbon, calculate your own carbon footprint. Tell a friend, get your families involved. I mean, I'm the biggest one of carpooling. If there are three couples going downtown, I say, yeah, we have one car, we can all fit in it. And things like that on a, you know, when you scale it out, if everybody did that, it would start to help. So everybody, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. I hope you learned from it. I hope you're inspired to act from everything that Shiloh shared with us. And we have an expression on our Facebook that we use a lot, and I've written blogs about it. Fight like your life depended on it, because it does. It's not a debate. It's really critical. Our Down to Earth show on November 2nd is Dr. Sharon Megdahl, who I have promised I was going to have on the show for 5 years. She's the director of Water Resources Research Center at the University of Arizona. Very well-known, well-renowned, well-respected. And she's going to be talking about our planet's most precious resource, water. And our national show, Mrs. Green's World, is Osprey, Ariel Lake, Women, Keepers of the Earth, return guests, and I can't wait. Shyla, thanks for showing up in our world, and thanks for what you're doing for the world. Make it a great, sustainable week, everybody.
Thank you so much, Gina. Thank you.
Thank you.